I'd like to welcome everybody to CSE 373, the analysis of algorithms. My name is Stephen Skeena. I'm the one that's going to be teaching the course. And one thing I'll apologize for in advance is that we're trying to tape the lectures in a way that there will be the audio, the lecture notes, and some video on a tape that I'm hoping we'll be able to put on the web, which will help, you know, people who aren't here and future generations. So let's be patient with this. Hopefully we'll figure out how to make this work over the next couple of classes. But I'd like to start out by going through the syllabus. The syllabus will be on the web if you're watching this in TV land. But I passed them out so people can see them. My syllabus slides I'm afraid to get to because of technology here. But anyway, I'm Steve Skeena. I'm the one teaching this course. It should be CSE 373, AMS 373, the Introduction to the Algorithms course. Some of you may be graduate students taking the course for proficiency. How many people are there like that? Okay, a couple. If you have particular concerns about your situation, come and talk to me. The stuff I'm going to be talking about at first is on the two sheets that represent the syllabus for the course. I'm the instructor. It gives my contact information. In particular, I encourage you to go to the course webpage where I keep a lot of information. Ideally, there will hopefully be the audio and video for the course on the webpage eventually. But certainly all my lecture notes and handouts and audio from previous semesters and things like that are there. So I encourage you to stop by there. My office hours are going to be after class and by appointment. So if you want to see me, come by, catch me after class, and we will catch. I take it back. After my other class. That means 11:15 in the morning to 12:45. Any questions about that? Logistics or anything like that? Okay, the textbook for the course is going to be a new edition of this book. This is the Algorithm Design Manual. I think it's a very good book. Okay, one reason is because I wrote it. But this is the first edition, which came out in like 1997. And the part that really is sort of the first half of the book, which is sort of the tutorial material that we would want to use to learn the stuff that we're really going to cover in the class, is a little thinner in this book than I would like it. So I spent a lot of time coming up with a second edition of the book. And the topic for the course will be this manuscript, which is the printout of, which is a copy of the new first half of the Algorithm Design Manual. Okay, it's about 200 pages longer than the previous first half, so there's more material, more deeper coverage of the material than in the original book. And I think it would be very good for people to be using the manuscript instead of using the full textbook. I think there's more material there that is relevant for you guys. And because the manuscript was just written, I Xeroxed copies. I have copies of them here, which I will sell to people after class at cost. It will be $11 each. Okay, I am not making a profit. Okay, if anyone thinks I'm making a profit, we can discuss it. And I am not. But the main reason I Xeroxed it and I'm selling it to you directly is a convenience issue. With the departmental secretary not being here to handle the money, it seemed like an easier thing to do it this way. So after class, I encourage anybody with $11 who's going to be taking this class to come by and buy a copy of the book. Any questions about that? Yes, questions. Do you have to buy the book? I would recommend the book. I recommend this book, okay, the $11 book. That's sort of the required text. I think it's, it obviously follows my lectures as closely as any book that you can imagine since I wrote the book and I wrote the lectures. The homework problems are also going to be drawn from. So I do think that unless someone's got serious financial problems, they should pony up the $11 and get the book. Okay? Any questions? So what is in the, there is stuff in the real book that is not in the manuscript, okay? The truth is that the real book here has two parts, okay? There is a textbook material guide and that there is a reference guide. What you are getting in here is the textbook material guide, which is substantially expanded over this. This it was 150 pages, this it is 350 pages. Not so much that there's more material, but there is, I think, a much better coverage, a much more detailed and easy coverage of it. So I have zero doubt that this is a better thing for introductory algorithm students to pursue. If you want the second half of the book, okay, I encourage you to buy this, okay? This will cost you about $75 in the bookstore. If this really means something to you, you should get it. If you object to buying this and this, maybe buy this and maybe I'll throw one of these in for you or something like that if you buy one at the bookstore or something like that. Any questions? Okay? Any questions about the book? So this, I think that you will find this. I'm hoping you will find this a good book, okay, to use in here. I think people have liked the old edition of the book, and I think for teaching purposes, I think this part of the book will be much better than before. Okay? But you guys are sort of being patient to find out. Any questions? Book or any other logistics. Questions? So if you're saying you're taking this class because you want to study the PhD qualifiers, the answer is that the part that you need to know is in the first part of the book, okay? If you want to go and, you know, look something up when you're in industry, you use the second part of the book, okay? So don't worry about that then. Any questions? But that's why when you see sections here that are pointing to sections that don't exist, the reason is they're sort of referring back to the second part of the book. But the coverage of that is certainly not, that's sort of for deeper coverage, certainly not for the purposes of what we're doing in here. Any questions? Okay. Okay, so let's finish going through the syllabus. The grading in here is going to be based on, I guess, five things. There is a big problem that I'm going to assign, okay? In fact, if you get one of the three handouts you should have gotten was this handout. This handout is the one that will say daily homework problems. And if you look at it, it is a date, okay, along with a problem number. And what I am saying is that I am going to start every lecture, every day as scheduled on the sheet, presenting the solution to a short algorithm problem covering basically what we did the lecture before, okay? And so what I want people to do is every day look at the problem of the day before class, write something on a sheet of paper, ideally thinking about the problem and solving it, okay? At the very least thinking about the problem, okay? Turn in that paper before at the beginning of class. I will then go through the problem of the day. And this provides a way for you to make sure that the way you're thinking about this material is the right way to think about it, okay? See how I would think about solving these problems, where the mistakes are, things like that, okay? So I find that the people who do the problems of the day seriously do well in this class, and the people who don't do the problems of the day seriously don't. That's actually seems to be the single biggest correlation I have found over the years between the numbers of problems of the day submitted and the actual midterm grades. They correlate perfectly, okay? So I encourage you to do that. The homework, the problem of the days count for a total of 5% of your grade. They will not be graded. So if you turn in something that says problem of the day with your name on it, that will count as much as a correct solution, okay? Of course, it will not help you prepare for the exams as well. But it's good to review the problem and think about it, even if you can't solve it right before class. Any questions about that? Okay. This is one thing I'm a big believer in. In addition, there will be five regular homework assignments. These will during the course of the semester. They count for a total of 15% of the grade. You are allowed to work in teams of two people. In fact, you're encouraged to work in teams of two people on the homework assignments. Actually, for four of the five homework assignments, you're supposed to work with a partner. So I encourage you to find a partner, okay, who you want to work with on the homework assignment. This enables you to sort of discuss. A lot of the problems are tricky. It's good to have two heads working on them. If one person understands something, they can explain it to another person, okay? You don't have to work in pairs, but in general, I believe that it is better if people work in pairs, Okay? So there will be four of the problem assignments you will work in pairs. There will be one other assignment, which is kind of an interesting assignment, which is the, when we get, at one point there will be a programming assignment, where the goal will be to come up with the fastest program for solving a particular algorithm contest problem. We have a contest in here, a race, okay, and there will be prizes for the fastest solution and for the slowest solution, okay, but you don't want the slowest solution, okay, that's just the initial tip-off here. Any questions? So that the race problem you'll work on individually. The other problem you'll work on, the problems you should work in with respect to a partner. Okay, any questions about partners or anything like that? Yes? If you're working taking this with 587, you are supposed to be working with a partner. As far as I'm concerned, you are a normal student, pretty essentially a normal student in the class. Okay? So I would encourage you to work on the homeworks with partners, just like everybody else. Any questions? Okay? Then there is going to be two midterms in here, each of which is worth 25% of the grade, and one final, which is 30% of the grade. Any questions about the grading? Okay, how are we going to do that? Okay. And again, I think I've described the exams and all. What other rules would I give for people in the class? Again, I encourage people to get the textbook. I encourage people to work with partners. One thing I will help do is if somebody cannot find a partner, I will help set them up with a partner, okay? But what I will not do is serve as a counselor if your partner doesn't work out very well, okay? So if your partner is a louse, doesn't do anything, is too stupid to work with you, I don't really want to know about it. Quietly break up with that partner after the next for the next homework assignment, and then find another partner, okay? Does that sound fair? And you know, if somebody can't find a partner, come to me at the beginning of class. I will announce that there is a person looking for a partner, and we will find you someone to mate with. Okay? Any questions about that? About partners or how we're going to do it? Other policies when you work as a part with a partner, you only turn in one homework between the two of you. Okay? So at the very least, there's less ink expended if you work in partners rather than pairs. Okay? The wrong way to work with a partner is to divide the problems up in half, and you do one half and he does the other half. The right thing to do is to sort of work together and think about it. Okay? Any questions about that? Sometimes people get into problems in the course of something bad happening to them during a semester. Okay? Their dog dies or something happens, you get maybe a week, you're too overwhelmed with other things, and you may want an extension on one of the homeworks. I am giving everybody in this class one extension on one homework. You pick the homework, okay? You get an extension of 1 week for free, okay? The way that you get that extension is when you turn in the homework, you write down, this is late, this is a free extension, okay? Now, your dog cannot die twice during the course of the semester, okay? So everybody gets one extension on one homework. Don't ask me for a second one. Okay? Any questions? People who are working as pairs, the homework has to be the homework itself is the thing that is late. So either both of them use the homework extension, or neither of them use the homework extension. Okay? So there's no magic bullet there. Okay? Any questions? Again, I encourage people to turn in the homeworks on time, okay? That's actually the right way to do it. But I understand people get into problems, and that's one way I handle that. Any questions? Okay? The other thing on the syllabus is there is some boilerplate about certain other issues. Issues about, again, any cheating, I will, deal with it the way that it's supposed to be dealt with, okay, and give an F and bring you up before the committee and all that kind of stuff. If you have any disabilities that I should know about, any learning disabilities or physical disabilities, you should let me know, and there's, again, standard ways of dealing with that, okay? Any questions about the logistics of the course? Okay? The other thing that I would say is the last item on the syllabus, is that I would like to establish as much personal contact with people as I can. It doesn't look like it's that large a class this year, which is good. I hope that we will have a lot of interactions in class. And and outside of class, if you have questions you want to ask me, you know, about algorithms or about life, I'm sort of available. I am hoping to have a pizza with, I like to have a pizza with the prof during the semester, where I, you know, get to have a sign-up sheet, people can come and have pizza with me at some point just to get to know some people. So if I don't announce that within, let's say, 3 or 4 weeks, remind me of that, okay? Any questions about course and policy or logistics or anything like that? What? I buy the pizza, but that's why I limit it to 10 students, so I don't go broke. Okay, any questions about pizza or algorithms or anything like that? Okay, the last thing that I would like, which I seem to have somehow, which I wanted to discuss, here I do have it, okay, is the lecture schedule. So on one of the syllabus, last page of the syllabus, should be the lecture schedule. The lecture schedule, the basic flow of the semester will be as follows. We're going to spend, you know, the first 3 lectures on preliminaries, things like what are algorithms, why are they important, what makes them tricky. We'll start talking about the mathematics of algorithm analysis. Okay, there is some mathematics in this course. Okay, there's the big O notation, which people have probably been exposed to. Weir has never heard of the big O notation. Weir has heard of the big O notation. Okay, everybody. Okay, how many people like the big O notation? Few people like it. How many people don't like it? A lot of people don't like it. Okay, so we're going to talk about that because it's a useful and important part of algorithm analysis. And try to get that down. And once you understand that, it's not hard to work with. So we'll talk about the mathematical preliminaries for the first 3 lectures or so. We will review elementary data structures, okay, for the next week, for about a week, 2 or 3 classes, on dictionaries and priority queues and things like that, which you've probably seen in some of your other classes, but are really the building blocks that more sophisticated algorithms are built from. We will then give a more careful presentation of the main sorting algorithm, okay, which you all have undoubtedly seen more than you want to see. Things like quicksort and heap sort and merge sort. And we're going to go through that as examples of how you analyze, you know, sophisticated algorithms, okay, because I think there's interesting lessons in all of these sorting algorithms. And we will go through that in some detail. And that's where we will have the first midterm. Any questions about that? After the midterm, we will talk about graph algorithms. And there we'll talk about, you know, again, depth-first and breadth-first search. We'll talk about the basic algorithms on graphs, like topological sort and graph finding connected components and things like that. And the main, let's say, sophisticated algorithms, things like minimum spanning trees and shortest paths. Okay, and you know, because graph algorithms are a very important part of the world. After that, we will talk about brute force search, backtracking and brute force search. How do you go through all configurations, find the optimal configuration? And that is where we will have our programming contest. Will be about a brute force search program. We'll talk about backtracking in the search section. After that, we will spend 3 lectures on dynamic programming, which is a very important algorithm design paradigm that once you understand dynamic programming, it's amazingly useful and actually surprisingly easy to think about. Unfortunately, until you understand it, it looks hopeless. And so hopefully over the course of the three lectures, we'll move from hopeless to understanding it. Especially because after that is the midterm, which will cover that material as well. After the midterm, we're going to focus on these problems basically of intractability. Up till through the first, second midterm, we'll talk about problems and finding and designing algorithms. After the midterm, we're going to talk about problems which don't have efficient algorithms and how you actually can prove and argue that an algorithm does not exist for a problem, which if you think about it is a really amazing thing. How do you prove that something doesn't exist? Okay, you can often know that you don't have something. You could say, find an efficient algorithm for this. If you can't can't find an efficient algorithm, that just means maybe you're too stupid to find an efficient algorithm. But there's really ways of proving that, in fact, no efficient algorithm exists. And that's going to be covering the last part of the course. Okay, we'll talk about hard problems and how you prove they're hard and what you do about them. Okay? Any questions about that? And finally, we'll have the final exam. Any questions about the flow of the semester? Yes? The final exam is cumulative, but the period between the midterms, each midterm will be only the stuff since the previous midterm. So the second midterm will not be cumulative. Okay? Although, of course, understanding stuff about sorting and data structures will help you graph algorithms. So a bad strategy would be to say, well, I'm not going to worry about the first midterm. I'm only going to worry about the material for the second midterm. I'm going to forget everything I knew before the first midterm. That would be a bad strategy, but it's not going to be cumulative. Any questions? Any other questions, logistics, anything like that? Okay? Okay, so if this works now, I'd like to try to figure out how, let's see if we can figure out how to move on to my slides with all this technology. Okay, so first question is, what is an algorithm? Okay, I mean, we're taking a course on algorithms. Okay, if I think about what an algorithm is, okay, it is the idea behind a computer program, okay, that, you know, I have a hard time when I sit on a plane, okay, someone talks to me next to me, oh, what do you do? Oh, you're a professor of computer science. You must work on machines. You know how to work PCs, and as you'll see by my performance with the technology so far, I don't, okay? You must build hardware. No, I don't. You must write software. No, I don't. Somehow what I work on are sort of the ideas behind the programs. Okay, that's really what an algorithm is. Okay? And one way I heard this, okay, that is interesting, is that an algorithm is the thing that stays the same about a program. When you change the language, when you change the machine, and when you change the location of the machine. So an algorithm is the thing that stays the same when the program's in Pascal on a Cray in New York, or BASIC on a Macintosh. These notes are available online. The new notes, which is what I'm suddenly getting a sinking feeling I don't have here. Okay, I'm preparing new lecture slides along with the book. Those will be on the web page also. They're not quite there yet. I'm hoping they're here when I turn the slides again. But I'm thinking that may be why they're badly formatted. Any questions? Okay. But the slides are in principle on the web. Any questions? If you think about what an algorithm is, there are a couple things that are important. One is that an algorithm has to solve a general problem. Okay, there's a difference between a problem and an instance, and this is a fundamental thing. A problem, when I think about an algorithm problem, I mean a specification. I talk about what the inputs look like, okay, and what the outputs look like. That's what I mean by an algorithm problem. So what is an algorithm problem? Sorting is an algorithm problem, okay? Sorting is the problem of you're given as input a sequence of n numbers, and as your output, you want to permute the sequence so that the ith element of the sequence is bigger than all the ones before it, and less than all the numbers after it, okay, or less than or equal to it. So when we talk about an algorithm problem, we are talking about something like this. Let's see if I can actually draw on this. Look at this. Can I draw on that? Is that visible up there? Okay, good. So an algorithm problem is something like this. A problem instance is something like this. A particular set of numbers is what I would call an instance. Okay, a particular set of names to be sorted. The data is the instance. The problem is the description of what the input and output is. And the algorithm is something that takes anything that satisfies the input and produces something that satisfies the output requirement. Any questions here? Okay. And when we look at algorithms, what we want is, once we live in a world where we are given algorithm problems, what we seek are algorithms which are correct and efficient. Those are the two criteria that we are mostly concerned with. Any questions? Okay, let's see. Work? No. Okay, let's see if I can make this work. No. Okay, anyone still believe that I work on software or technology? Okay. Let's see if we have anybody have any idea how to. I might do with something like this. Oh, wait, is this it? Okay, let's try this now. Is this going to be better? I can still write on it. That makes you feel better. Okay. For my next trick. Okay. Let's try this a couple more. I'm sorry about this. Escape. Okay, good. Is that readable or not as good as before? Can I zoom in the that's an interesting question. Probably not the answer is. Okay. Let's not play any more games. Maybe we'll play. Okay. Let me try doing this. Okay. Sorry about this. Zoom to edit view full screen. Back there. Okay, good. Can we move back and forth? Yes. Okay. So we were talking about algorithms, and the issues in algorithms are correctness and efficiency. What I mean by correctness is that when you have a correct algorithm, it means that for any input instance that satisfies the problem, that satisfies the input definition, it always produces the desired output, okay? And one thing that we're going to see in here is that algorithm correctness is not always obvious, okay? So it's sorting. If you have a correct sorting algorithm, there usually are cases that are difficult. Things like if the input is already sorted. Okay, if your algorithm is correct, it's got to be able to not crash if the input is already sorted. If the input consists of repeated elements, sorting 100 things, all of which are the same, okay, that's not allowed to crash either. It's got to leave it, you know, as it is. So we're going to deal with correctness in here, okay, and I'd like to give you an example of a problem to show you that correctness is not a trivial matter, okay? And it has to do, let me give you a sort of a real-world algorithm problem. It's the problem, which is a problem actually I talk about solving in the book, where I was once visiting a company that makes VLSI testing equipment, okay? They have, printed circuit board testing equipment. You open up a piece of electronics, you'll see a printed circuit board on it, and parts are soldered into the board, okay? So has everybody seen something like that? Okay, so yes, that shouldn't be too alien. So the company I was visiting was actually not so much soldering, but was verifying that that circuit boards were correct. But let's think about soldering as the application. So you have a printed circuit board, okay, which is a, let's just see if we can get this thing working right. You have a printed circuit board, and on the back of it are a bunch of points, okay, places where you, the soldering iron has to go to cement the part into the board. And you've got a robot with a soldering gun, right? So the way that the machine that assembles the printed circuit board has to do is it has to solder every one of these contact points to assemble the board. Does that make sense, or is that not clear? How many people don't see what I'm talking about? Okay, how many people do see what I'm talking about? Everybody. So that's good. So suppose you are in charge of programming a robot, and the robot's job is to visit all of the points in the board, okay? Soldering them. Bzz, 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 okay? What is the best order to solder it in? Okay? If you're, let's say, you designed to program the robot, there are a bunch of different ways you could program the robot, right? You could program the robot to go here, to 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 here. What would make one ordering better than another? Because you have to visit all the points, right? If the board isn't assembled properly. Does it matter which order you visit the points in? Someone with a hand. Okay, yes. Depends upon the cost. What would be the logical cost of something like this? Yes. What? Time. So if you think about it, you would like to, if you're assembling printed circuit boards, you hired the robot for a reason, okay? And the robot's job is to try to make these circuit boards as quickly as possible, right? So the robot has to spend some time moving the arm from here to there, 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 right? Does everybody agree with that? What would be the best tour, okay? The one that would minimize the assembly time, okay? In principle, it seems to me that if we assume that travel time is proportional to distance, which seems like a pretty reasonable assumption, right? Okay? If we assume that travel time is proportional to distance, then I claim that what you want is to find the tour that visits all the points in the minimum amount of distance. Does that seem like a reasonable problem? Okay, any questions about that? So, let's see. Oh, no. Now let's see if we can do this right. So. Yeah. David. Okay, good. So the shortest robot tour problem is given as input a set of points. Okay? Find the ordering of those points such that you minimize the total distance traveled. Okay? Any questions about what that problem is? Okay, I think the algorithm problem is clear. The input is a set of points in the plane. The output is the permutation that minimizes distance. Okay? Can anyone give me an algorithm for this problem? Okay, can anyone suggest an algorithm? Back there, yes. So the shortest path algorithm, what does the shortest path algorithm mean? Okay, so you're giving me actually, you're referring to some higher authority or something like that, okay? Finite matter, something like that. Can anyone give me an algorithm that you might be able to write a program for? Okay, yes. Isn't the Dijkstra's algorithm, okay, so people are thinking, what about Dijkstra's algorithm? Dijkstra's algorithm, which we will review later in the course of the semester, solves a different problem. Dijkstra's algorithm solves the problem of finding the shortest point distance between two points, okay? So if I want to know the shortest distance from here, I think it's from here, you know, if let's say I'm given this graph. I'm given this graph, and I want to find the shortest distance from here to here, following edges in the graph. Dijkstra's algorithm would be smart enough to do that. But it only gives you the shortest path between pairs of points, right? It's not solving the same problem that we are interested in. Okay? Any questions about that? Okay? Any other ideas? Yes? Okay, so you're suggesting, I think, an algorithm like this. So
just see if I can figure this out. Okay?
You're suggesting an algorithm like this, I think. You're suggesting you start at one point,
okay,
and you find which is the point that is closest to it. Does everybody agree with that? You're saying start from this point and find which point is closest to it.
Okay,
let's say this one. Okay, and then you find which point is closest to this. Is this the algorithm you're suggesting? Follow that way, follow that way. Doing the nearest neighbor tour. And lo and behold, you find the correct example, correct answer on that example. Okay, but does everybody see that one heuristic that we could use is the nearest neighbor tour? Start from one point, go to the nearest neighbor of that point. Go from the nearest neighbor of that point to another point, and so on. Any questions about what the nearest neighbor algorithm is? Okay. What is the problem with the nearest neighbor algorithm? The problem is, if I can get this to work. Okay, let's try this thing here. Click. Problem is I can't work this. Wait a second. Maybe. The problem is that the nearest neighbor tour is wrong, okay? That algorithm is a wrong algorithm. It does not guarantee us the shortest tour on every set of points. Let's take an example here. If you look at my example, okay? Here I have a set of points where, let's say the point you picked was the point labeled 0. Okay, here I'll try to go. Let's do this in red. People like red. There you go. Okay? Suppose we start at the point named 0, and there happens to be a point 1 to the left and 1 to the right of it. Okay? Which one of those two is the nearest neighbor? Well, by moving one of them in a little bit, right, you can make either one of them the nearest neighbor. Anybody agree with that? So let's say I made it so that this was the nearer neighbor. And now this is 2 points units from the other point. And 2 units from the other point there, right? Does everybody believe that I could make it so the next nearest neighbor of this point is going backwards? Do people see that? Okay. Certainly if it's a tie, you don't know what to do, right? So you could pick either way and you might go wrong. If you want to make it the heuristic, you move it in epsilon closer, it's no longer a tie, right? There is a nearest neighbor, right? Does everybody see that what I'm going to do is jump over to this one? And because of how I laid out the points, the next ones are 4 units apart from each other. Does everybody see that if I put the points out in that way, the tour that the nearest neighbor heuristic might give me is this back and forth thing? Does everybody see that? Does everybody believe that that is longer than just going ka-chunk, ka-chunk? Okay? I think it is obvious that that's a lot longer. How do I prove that to you? Well, look, there's always exactly two lines here. You go over every point on the line twice with my optimal tour, right? Here you go over every point at least twice. Okay? And in this case, up to n times, right? This tour can be vastly longer than that. Does everybody agree with that? So if your job was to program the robot for testing purposes and management came by to watch it and you gave it this circuit, I think management would be happy to see the robot bouncing back and forth, okay, on this simple example, okay? The nearest neighbor's solution is wrong. Does everybody see that? Any questions about it? Any other ideas how we can solve the robot problem? Questions? Idea. Okay, so what we're saying here is that's an interesting idea. In fact, if I can figure out how to use my slide. Got it, okay? What you're talking about maybe would be called the closest neighbor tour, okay? Her idea is basically find the closest pair of points, connect them. Then find the next closest pair of points and connect them. Making sure you don't create something like this.
That's right, green.
Right? Does everybody agree that this would be a bad thing? I can't have a T-junction, right? I can only connect each point to at most two places, right? So the question is, her idea is to always, for each pair of points, pick the pair that is that would not create a cycle so far, or a vertex of degree three, something that won't make into a cycle. Keep connecting the closest thing until at the end you have no choice, and then connect it into a cycle. That's basically your algorithm, correct? Everybody see that algorithm? Does it seem like a reasonable thing? Okay? It's got to do at least as well as the other algorithm. Well, no, it doesn't take it back, okay? Does it have to do at least as well as the other one? Certainly, if it happened that the points were on a line, it might do form a connected path, okay? But probably wouldn't. But the main thing to note is that this algorithm, what the property it shares with the other one is that it is wrong. And let me convince you of this, okay? Suppose, let's say, I gave you these points. These are, it looks like I've got two sets of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 points up there, okay? I've got two sets of 5 points. Let's try any other color you want to see. I'll take this, okay? Two sets of 5 points here, okay, with the property that they are slightly closer together, the rows are slightly closer together than they are farther apart. Everybody see what I've done here? This is going to be a distance of 1 minus epsilon, and that's a distance of 1, okay? So what is your algorithm going to do? Is your algorithm going to go and say ka-chunk, 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 ka-chunk? Okay? And now you're forced, you run out of pairs of length 1 plus minus epsilon, right? Now you're going to try to connect them so you don't create a cycle. Well, there's not much you can do here. You know, there's a couple different things you can do, but the best thing you can hope to do is something like that before finally connecting them across. Does everybody agree that that's what your algorithm is basically going to do? Something like that. Okay? And is it clear that this one is longer than just connecting them in this nice rectangular box? Okay, this one's about 22% shorter than the other one. Okay, so there's a sizable difference here. Okay, any questions about that? So your algorithm also has the property that it is wrong. Okay, it doesn't mean it's a smart algorithm. Okay, it doesn't mean it's not a reasonable idea. Okay. But it shows that correctness issues are not so obvious. Okay, any other ideas on how you can do it? Yes. Okay, not sure I understand what you're saying, but I can tell you it's wrong, okay? Let's just leave it at that. Okay, any other ideas? Anyone, yes, questions? Okay, so now here's one. Let's see if we can get this one right now. Boom. Boom. Boom, good, okay. So another idea that's a correct idea would be to say, can we do it with exhaustive search? So your idea says that a solution represents a permutation of all the points. There are n points that are given to you, okay? Find an ordering of those points, okay? And test it, measure how long the tour is, correct? Okay? Then try a different ordering of those points. If it is better, measure it. If it is worse, ignore it, right? And if we go through, how many permutations of endpoints are there? How many different arrangements of endpoints are there? N factorial, to be precise. Okay, so if there are 3 points, there's 3 factorial or 6 possible orderings of the points. In fact, if you're a little bit clever, you could notice that we can always say that the first point in our tour is point one, because every circular tour has to go to every point twice, right? So it doesn't really matter where we start, because we know we're going to end up there. But bottom line, by testing something like n factorial permutations of the points, okay, what's going to happen is one of them has to be the right one, okay? And since we tried all of them, this algorithm is clearly correct. Does everybody agree with that? Is there any problem with this algorithm? It takes a long time, okay? How long does it take? Let's see if we can do this. It takes any longer than how it for me to figure out how to use the projector. The problem is exhaustive search is a very slow algorithm. If you look at n factorial, how big does n factorial get? Okay? 3 factorial is 6. That's not so big. Okay? But what is 10 factorial? Okay? And if anybody's got, does anyone have a calculator with them? With such thing? Okay? 3 factorial, I believe, 10 factorial, I believe, is about 3 million. Okay? Which is not so unbelievably terrible a number. But 20 factorial is something like 3 million, is a ridiculously large number, okay? So if you tried to write a program and solve it doing all permutations of 20 things, your program will not terminate in your lifetime or something like this, okay? So the problem is exhaustive search is very slow. And so we live in a world where right now we've had two ideas for what I will call heuristics. Programs that give you an answer to the problem, although not necessarily the right answer, that have the property that they're reasonably fast. You could run them on thousands of points, okay, or hundreds of thousands of points comfortably. We also have a correct algorithm with the property that it's too slow. And so now we're at the point, this is where ideally someone would come up with a fast algorithm that is correct, okay? And what's interesting is we will prove at the end of the course that for this particular problem, okay, there is no such fast algorithm for it, okay, or essentially making strong technical assumptions, there is no such correct algorithm for this problem, fast correct problem for this thing. It's something called the traveling salesman problem. Has anyone ever heard of the traveling salesman problem? Okay. Okay, so you know the name of it, but knowing the name of it won't help you. Okay, because again, there's no fast algorithm for this, okay? Any questions? So the moral here is that there are problems for which are well-defined problems, okay? There are obvious heuristics or ideas for heuristics, but a thing is a heuristic, a procedure is a heuristic unless you give a proof that it is correct. And the idea that it's obviously correct is usually not a good enough proof, okay? Any questions about it? This may be an obvious point to people, but quite often when people work on a problem, a serious problem where the algorithmics are non-trivial, they will spend a lot of time thinking they have bugs in their program. Look, my program isn't giving the right answer. Maybe I have to change my program. It could be that your program is right in that it's implementing your algorithm correctly, but the algorithm itself just doesn't always give you the right answer. Okay, and what we're going to be talking about in here are how do you design algorithms that are fast and are correct. Any questions? Any questions about anything so far? Okay, let me see if I can do this. Okay, so one idea, sometimes when people think that their algorithm is too slow, okay, one idea is immediately to go try to buy a faster computer, okay? Stony Brook, again, Stony Brook falls into this thinking a little bit. I know you may have heard Stony Brook is buying a big supercomputer, one of the biggest computers in the world. They're spending $25 million on this, okay? And it'll have thousands of processors, and it will compute lots of things incredibly quickly, okay? And I'm not saying the computer is a bad idea, but suppose this million-dollar computer or $25 million computer and put it to work solving traveling salesman problems by exhaustively searching, okay? The fact is, it's something that takes exponential time to n factorial time. Their supercomputer could probably search all examples of size 15 in a year, where your PC might solve all examples of size 12 in a year. Okay, that's not a big bang for your buck, right? Does everybody see that? Somehow where the real benefits when it comes to efficiency come in are when you can find algorithms that are really significantly faster than other algorithms. We'll see a lot of examples of that during the semester. And the interesting thing is that a fast algorithm on a slow computer eventually beats a slow algorithm on a fast computer. Okay, and usually it doesn't take a very large problem before the fast algorithms win. Okay, any questions? If you really need to compute something fast, your dream world is a fast algorithm and a fast computer. Okay, and that's, I guess, why you buy one. Any questions? Okay. So how are we going to describe algorithms in this class? There's usually several, there's like three main ways that you can describe algorithms. Okay? And the way I think about it is an algorithm is a sequence of steps, a procedure for how you're going to solve something. There are three different ways that you can do this, okay, conventionally. One is you can describe an algorithm in English, okay, and describe what it's supposed to do by writing it down. Second, you could describe an algorithm by using pseudocode. What is pseudocode? I think of pseudocode as being a programming language which doesn't have a compiler, okay? It is sort of a way of describing it sort of like it's a program, but making up the language as you go along so that you convey the idea of the procedure as well as possible, okay? The third possibility is you could describe your algorithm by writing a real program in a real programming language. What is the advantage of doing something in a real programming language? Okay? One is you could test it and run it, and that's useful. People will pay you for a program, right? So if you have a program. So in principle, writing something in a real programming language is good. What is bad about designing an algorithm in a real programming language? It's harder, okay? You have to specify all the painful details, because usually when you test your program, it doesn't work, right? So it's a lot more work to implement an algorithm for real than it is to implement it in some kind of a pseudocode thing. What's an advantage of doing something in English? Okay, what would be good about writing an algorithm in English? They can convince layperson. You say in principle it's easier to read and understand. Okay, and so the way I think about it is that these three methods, from sort of English pseudocode to real programming language, describe different levels of detail, okay? And if you looked at the previous slides when I was describing the algorithm, I did have pseudocode for the algorithm, right? But I actually, when we were describing the heuristics to you, we were able to describe it in English clearly, okay? So the way I like to describe algorithms, and I think is in general the right way, is the ideas of the algorithm should be done in English, okay? And then if you need, you go to pseudocode, typically if you have some details that are very tricky or intricate that the English does not capture in a way that is interesting, okay? The worst thing to do that I hate students do a lot is when I ask to give an algorithm in class for a homework or something like that, immediately start writing in pseudocode that I can't understand, okay? The right thing to do is an algorithm, remember, is the idea behind a program. The first thing you should describe is what is your idea? What are you basically doing? So the way to probably describe homework, algorithm problems on homeworks or in general, is to first write down what your idea is. I am going to solve this by using brute force search, okay? And then maybe describe how you're actually doing the brute force search in more detail as you need it, okay? Any questions about that? In the first edition of my book, I described all the algorithms in English or in pseudocode. And one thing you discover if you write pseudocode and you have lots of people read it is that your pseudocode is wrong. So one thing in the new edition of the book, most of the algorithms, I would say maybe 50% of the algorithms, are actually written as real programs that I've run and tested and that are available to you if you want to play around with them. Okay, so hopefully that will be clearer. One thing, you know, I'd be interested to hear from you guys is whether or not how you like that. Any questions? Questions? They're written in C. My programs are written in C, which if you know Java, it looks like C. Okay, so it shouldn't be that much of a problem. I'm curious to see what people think about that. Okay, any questions? How many people here can read C or write C comfortably? Most people. How many people feel they can't? No one who will admit to it. Okay, so that suggests that we're okay here. Any questions? Okay, good. I do one other comment on the book while I'm here. The book is, again, I like the book. I wrote the book. One thing that I would like people to do, I put it on the syllabus, but I forgot to discuss this then. I encourage everybody when they're reading the book, if they find a mistake or something that isn't clear, to write that down on your book and show it to me at the end of the semester. I will give people extra credit here who submit to me a copy of my book with corrections, okay? So a good way to get extra credit in here would be, as described on the syllabus, find my mistakes and correct them for me and give me your copy of the book afterwards. I'll replace it with a real copy, so it's not to get my $11 back or something like that. Because I'd like to get any feedback that you guys can give. Any questions about that? Okay? Any questions? Okay, fair enough. No, I would not prefer email. I would prefer a physical manuscript at the end given to me. Okay? And if you're afraid of parting with your book, you can prepare an email and send it to me at the end of the semester. That's what I would like to do. Any questions? Okay? The other thing that when we talk about algorithms, again, we're specifying algorithms, we also have to specify problems, okay? And again, for an algorithm to work, okay, you need to be able, an algorithm only can be correct if the problem that you give it is well specified, okay? A lot of problems, I go work with people, I try to find algorithms for them. They will come back with a very, very vague specification of their problem and say, find an algorithm to find the best tour. Like, well, what is the best tour? You know, one that doesn't have too many turns and one that doesn't take too much distance and one that passes by pretty scenery and stuff like that. Okay? That is not a well-defined problem. Does everybody see what I mean by this? When you have multiple criteria, it's often hard to come up with a well-defined problem. If I ask for what the shortest tour is, that is a well-defined problem. It has a single answer, a well-defined answer. And so in principle, you can find it, okay? So part of specifying an algorithm is specifying your problem so that it's correct, okay? Any questions? Okay, let's see if we can do this. Okay.